posturing and preparation for the G20 summit in Japan. It's Thursday, June 27th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You can find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, trade concerns shift business in Asia. Silicon Valley awaits G20 discussions. Democrats debate presidential aspirations. A rare political walkout. Musical learning. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. officials are finalizing plans for President Donald Trump's visit to South Korea later this week. But White House officials are shrugging off speculation that Trump will hold another summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. From Seoul, VOA's Bill Gallo reports even if another Trump-Kim meeting were to happen, it is not clear how it could move forward stalled nuclear talks.
They may be exchanging personal letters, but for now, don't expect another summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. That's the message from U.S. officials ahead of Trump's stop in South Korea. But although the White House has played down the possibility of an impending Trump-Kim summit, many in Seoul still hope for a breakthrough. In an interview Wednesday, South Korean President Moon Jae-in said North Korea and the U.S. are in talks on a third summit. If Trump does decide to push ahead with another meeting, he could have a dramatic backdrop. South Korean officials say Trump's visit may include a stop at the demilitarized zone that divides the two Koreas. The DMZ's Panmunjom border village has long been mentioned as a possible venue for a Trump-Kim summit.
It is possible for Kim and Trump to have a meeting in Panmunjom since they have built up trust, but there is a very small chance of this meeting happening here and now.
Speculation about a third Trump-Kim meeting intensified after the two men's latest exchange of personal letters.
He wrote me a beautiful letter on birthday. It was my birthday, as you know, last week. He wrote me a beautiful letter. I thought it was very nice. And just two friendly letters. We get along very well.
No mention of another meeting?
Maybe there was, but we at some point we'll do that.
Kim says he is seriously contemplating the, quote, interesting contents of Trump's latest letter. No one has any idea what that means.
It is clear that both Kim and Trump want to make progress with the talks, but neither has much room to give in.
Trump wants Kim to agree to completely abandon his nuclear weapons. Kim wants the United States to relax sanctions before taking any further steps.
Even if they don't reach a deal, they could show their willingness toward peace. It is highly unlikely they will meet due to the lack of time, but we need to be open to all possibilities.
Both Kim and Trump say they are eventually open to a third summit. When that happens is anyone's guess. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says he hopes the United States and China will resolve their trade war through constructive dialogue when they meet at a gathering of leaders from the group of 20 major economies. Abe spoke at a news conference Wednesday ahead of this week's summit in Osaka. He said he wants the G20 to deliver a strong message on issues such as the promotion of free trade, innovation-driven global growth, and rulemaking for the digital economy. Abe said at this G20 he doesn't want to highlight differences of opinions. He wants to persistently identify common points and find common ground to reach a solution. Trump and China's President Xi Jinping are expected to meet separately on the sidelines. The two-day G20 summit begins Friday. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit our website, voanews.com. Trump heads to Japan for G20 summit. Trump says more tariffs on China possible if trade deal not reached. Malaysia pits palm oil against fighter jets in EU trade spat. Huawei says 5G business as usual despite U.S. sanctions. Trump and Kim exchange letters, but will they meet at the DMZ? Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Ahead of the G20 summit, and in anticipation of President Donald Trump and Xi Jinping's meeting, there have been reports that the U.S.-China trade war is weighing more heavily on businesses operating in the Asia-Pacific region, with companies experiencing more delays or cancellation of investments. VOA Asia's Anna Cook spoke with Saurabh Gupta, a senior Asia-Pacific International Relations Policy Specialist at the Institute for China-America Studies, on what this trend means in the long term for global companies.
They are kind of in wait and watch because they don't have a finality one way or the other. So at this point of time, it's more to do with not making further or additional investments, or those investments which were on the horizon, they're probably scaling back. But my general sense is it's more wait and watch rather than outright cancellation in terms of making investments.
Mm-hmm. So you are more optimistic that eventually it'll be resolved and, you know, this negative effect won't last as long?
Yes, that's my view. It's just, I think there's just very significant dependence on both sides to the other. Of course, the U.S. has a greater leverage in this dependence simply because it has a lot of core technologies which the Chinese seek. But China is a huge market, and it will be a huge market for the next 30 years.
And it seems like, according to the numbers so far and from surveys, not a whole lot of companies are experiencing significant negative impacts from the trade war. From your research, that a lot of companies operating in Asia are experiencing heavy blows from the trade war, or do you think the negative impact on companies is still settling in to take effect?
I agree with that latter point. It's still settling in the process of taking effect, so it's not really being felt to that extent as people initially anticipated. But also it has to do with the fact that, you know, they are still in this wait and watch situation. And therefore people have kept their investments kind of on hold or kind of reduced them to some extent. In addition to this, if the trade war does not pan out well, there is bound to be a lot of volatility in the global economy of the consequences of this trade war in terms of technology decoupling and technology denials, and at the Chinese end, there might be consumer boycotts of U.S. products. And those elements, each individually and collectively, can really become a dampener on global growth. So this wait and watch mode is also the reason why we are not seeing the impact of the trade war being really excessive so far. But it could really hurt down the line if the trade war does not end well, ends badly.
There's also been surveys that more companies are considering readjusting their supply chains away from China and the U.S. Do you think this is an actual threat that the world or companies are considering very seriously?
I think actually this is something that they are considering seriously, but they're considering it from a medium and long-term point of view. The trade war has really unsettled a lot of businesses as to what might happen. Even if the trade war pans out well, what could happen in the next 5, 10, 15 years? And so they are kind of redoing their sums in seeing, for example, low-cost manufacturing, which was in China, and there are options elsewhere like Vietnam or Bangladesh or Cambodia, better to move those out right now or to make the plans to move those out regardless of how the trade war goes, because that's a part of de-risking your operations, and you can have the same cost savings elsewhere.
There is a meeting coming up very soon between President Xi Jinping and Donald Trump at the G20. You know, mm-hmm. What do you think the businesses are kind of hoping for at the end of this meeting, and what do you think is at stake?
Well, I am on this one, I can say with utter confidence, at least from the business point of view, they want a certain patch up happening and in that meeting in Osaka so that the negotiations, which were going really well and went off the rails, are placed back on the rails.
Saurabh Gupta, a senior Asia-Pacific International Relations Policy Specialist at the Institute for China-America Studies. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Anna Cook. Happening now in Asia, China and a group of Southeast Asian countries, along at odds over control of the sea between them, aim to finish phase one of a maritime code of conduct within months of 17 years of trying to resolve Asia's widest-reaching sovereignty dispute. It could happen perhaps by November. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. With U.S. and Chinese leaders set to meet this week on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Japan, there is a glimmer of hope that progress will begin to end the trade war between the two superpowers. Fears of the U.S. slapping more tariffs on Chinese goods have rattled companies in both countries, deepening worries that positions are hardening. Michelle Quinn looks at what is at stake, especially for Silicon Valley firms.
The world will be watching as U.S. President Donald Trump and China's President Xi Jinping meet on the sidelines of the Group of 20 Industrialized Nations Summit in Japan later this week. The Trump administration says the future of the U.S. economy is in the balance, but some disagree with the tactics.
So we're in a position where we view ourselves as having the most serious problem you can face in the trade space, with nothing less than the jobs of our children on the line. And if you face that, then there are going to be issues. Now, it's fair for you to say what you said.
Mr. Ambassador, because time is short, I don't take a backseat to anybody in terms of fighting China cheating. The question is how you do it.
Silicon Valley is paying attention. Its continuing success is tied to Chinese manufacturing, talent, and investment, as well as access to the enormous Chinese market.
Well, the meeting is really important because it will signal to us whether Donald Trump is interested in resuming the negotiations with China and try and reach a resolution to the dispute, or whether he's decided that no deal is better for him and his reelection campaign than a deal.
The U.S. says that China's unfair trade practices, including stealing intellectual property and blocking some companies from doing business in China, hurt U.S. workers. Gregory Wojnarowski was a lawyer for General Electric covering China.
Companies, if you're a Google or a Facebook, you've been largely blocked out of China. So what the president is doing in his own aggressive way, whether you agree or disagree with the tactics, he's actually fighting the fight that I believe a lot of the tech companies probably silently are happy to see him doing.
Despite the tech industry's frustrations with China, a wide range of U.S. firms, including Apple and Microsoft, oppose imposing more tariffs. Apple said such a move could tilt the playing field to its global rivals.
Slapping tariffs, every economist will tell you, is not necessarily the best way to achieve that result. The president believes otherwise, and so far he's been getting the attention of these people and getting them to the tables.
Every American community is in the middle of this one way or the other. Silicon Valley may be more than most because the tech industry is highly intertwined with China.
The two leaders are not expected to end the stalemate, but Silicon Valley will be watching for signs that tensions are easing or deepening. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
Coming up, voters will try to discern substance from noise. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
The this news from VOA Asia. The International Olympic Committee says the Tokyo 2020 Olympics have generated record domestic sponsorship revenues of more than $3 billion, three times more than any previous Summer Games. There's huge enthusiasm among the Japanese, and the public have rushed in the millions to buy tickets. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook to see more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, who will be the next president of the United States? 20 Democrats each think it will be them. Their road to the 2020 presidential party nomination begins with the first of what will be monthly debates among the candidates leading up to the first caucus and primary votes early next year. The first debates will be held over two nights, the first just a short time from now, and Thursday night U.S. time, and will feature 10 different contenders each night vying for the right to take on President Donald Trump in November of 2020. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone shares a preview.
It may be the most crowded Democratic field of all time, led for now by former Vice President Joe Biden. Biden's argument is that he is the strongest candidate to take on President Donald Trump next year.
I hope to be your nominee. I'm going to work as hard as I can to get your support, but here's the deal. Whomever the Democratic nominee is, we have to stay together and elect a Democrat president of the United States of America.
In recent days, Biden has come under attack for defending his long-ago work with segregationists in the Senate, potentially opening up a new vulnerability. Trailing Biden in the polls is Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who has been surging of late.
This is what democracy is all about. It's about being out, being with people, and having a chance to talk about our vision for America. You know, it's not enough just to say not Donald Trump.
Pete Buttigieg, the previously little-known mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and California Senator Kamala Harris round out the top tier. A large group of other Democratic contenders continues to lag behind, hoping to build momentum with a strong debate performance. The debates mark a turning point in the campaign, says analyst Kyle Condon.
I really think the debates have become sort of the main event almost of the primary season, particularly because you've got all these candidates going across the country, appearing at some of the key primary states and really all across the country. But we don't actually have any voting to go on here until early February of next year.
Contenders will be under pressure to make a quick impression, says expert Larry Sabato.
You're going to have four, five, six candidates who find just the right soundbite, who find just the right attack on one another or on President Trump to get in that highlights reel. They will be the ones potentially to gain from the debates. The others may lose ground and may lose donors.
President Trump is likely to be the focal point of attack in the Democratic debates, and he is already eager to take on the Democratic field.
Our radical Democrat opponents are driven by hatred, prejudice, and rage. They want to destroy you, and they want to destroy our country as we know it. Not acceptable. It's not going to happen.
Trump's debate performances in 2016 helped to propel him to the Republican Party nomination. Many Democrats will be looking for what experts call a breakthrough moment, including Andra Gillespie.
You know, if their top-tier candidate could help sustain their front-runner status, or if they're somewhere in the middle could actually help forge a type of, you know, breakthrough moment that might get them extra attention.
Elizabeth Warren is the top contender in the first debate on Wednesday. Biden, Sanders, Buttigieg, and Harris will all be on stage for the second night of debate on Thursday. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia says it will look to China instead of the EU to buy new fighter jets, a deal likely worth upwards of $1 billion, should the EU move to phase out the use of palm oil as a transport biofuel by 2030 over environmental concerns. Indonesia and Malaysia are the world's two largest palm oil exporters. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, something rather unusual in U.S. politics. Republican state senators in Oregon remained in hiding Wednesday in an attempt to avoid a vote on a controversial climate bill. As a result of their action, more than 100 other bills, including funding for state agencies, are at risk of being scrapped. The Western States House Bill 2020 would set limits to carbon emissions, with permits auctioned off to polluting industries. Republicans say the bill would hurt rural residents of Oregon. Democrats have a majority in both chambers of that state's Congress, and the bill is likely to pass if it comes to the floor, which cannot happen unless there is a quorum of two-thirds of senators present. VOA's Latika Hoke reports the state governor, a Democrat, has given authorization to state police to track them down.
Oregon's Republican senators walked out of the Capitol building in Salem on Thursday and have not returned since then. Their absence has led to the cancellation of a vote on Sunday. Oregon Senate has 30 seats, 18 of them held by Democrats, but at least 20 senators have to be present for a vote to take place.
Senate Republicans failed to show up and failed to do their jobs.
Governor Kate Brown has authorized state police to find the missing senators, but so far none has been tracked down.
We have avoided being within the state boundaries where the governor can exercise at her prerogative the state troopers to call us back to the state capitol.
The Republican senators fiercely oppose the bill, which aims to encourage businesses to switch to green technology. The Democrat-backed plan is to slash emissions by 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. But Republicans say the ensuing gas and diesel price hikes would disproportionately affect rural Oregonians. They want a statewide referendum on the plan.
I am doing the work of my constituents by avoiding saddling all Oregonians with this horrid piece of legislation.
The walkout over the climate change bill affects more than 120 other bills, since no votes can be made until the missing Republicans return. Oregon's Senate president on Sunday appealed to the fugitive lawmakers to return.
This is the saddest day of my legislative life.
But the Republicans point out that in 2001, House Democrats, then a minority, staged a five-day walkout to block a Republican bill.
It would seem to be hypocritical of the Democrats to use the same, basically the same procedure that we're using now, and then when we use it, say that it's not appropriate.
The missing senators have been ordered to pay a $500 fine for every day of absence from work. Their supporters have set up an online fundraiser to pay those fines. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Music may help students achieve in school. On that note, VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
Research over the past few years has provided evidence that music education can help a child's brain to grow and mature quickly. A new study by researchers at Canada's University of Manitoba suggests students enrolled in high school music courses, regardless of factors such as their socioeconomic background or ethnicity, scored higher in math, science, and English exams than students not involved with music education. The study proposes that children who were taught to play a musical instrument in primary school and continued to play in secondary school were also found to be one academic year ahead of their non-musical colleagues in math, science, and English skills. The study authors found that students studying instrumental music did better academically than those who studied vocal music. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
That's why our theme song has no words. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also hear us on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. And you can hear us on the radio. Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore carries our program. We say hello and thank you to everyone who is listening there today. Our director, who we always like to thank, is Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America.